Medina.
May it please the court.
Shepherd.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Adam Shepherd. I, along with my co-counsel, Barry Shepherd, represent the appellant, Juan Martin Reyes Medina. The case before the court involves the imposition of consecutive sentences in the face of a statutory presumption in favor of concurrent sentences. The offense conduct to which the defendant pled were so-called telephone counts, wherein on March, the evening of March 11th, the defendant had a telephone conversation with a cooperating informant, and then the next morning he had a follow-up conversation with that same informant involving arrangements for a delivery of kilograms of what ultimately was sham cocaine, but which the defendant pleaded to as using the telephone in an attempt to possess cocaine. We argued in the district court for concurrent sentences. We argued that the presumption was not rebutted by the application of the 3553 factors. The district court ruled that a guideline sentence was appropriate. In order to achieve that guideline sentence, the district court imposed consecutive sentences. Based on the nature and the circumstances of this case, we submit that the presumption in favor of concurrent sentences was not rebutted. Specifically, there is no indication of any prior criminal history by Juan Martin Reyes Medina. He had zero criminal history points. No indication that he was involved in drug dealing prior to this episode in his life. There was an informant who pled guilty in a prior case, and that led to the delivery in this case. There is another individual in the car. The defendant was the passenger. There's no indication in the record of what the defendant did with the bag once he received it through the car-to-car exchange. The defendant made no attempt to flee, nor did he use any violence on the date of the arrest. We cite to other cases where similar conduct warranted a less severe sentence, cases that didn't even involve phone counts. We cite to a Mendez case where I believe 60 months was imposed. There's the case out of Florida that we cite where offloading cocaine warranted a 63-month sentence. In our sentencing memorandum before the district court, we drew the court's attention to cases where concurrent sentences were appropriate for use of telephone counts. We cited to the C case, C-E-A case, and that was a case where the guidelines called, I think it was 108 months. Yet on the use of the telephone counts, the defendant received a concurrent 48-month sentence. That case involved 10 kilograms. This case involved 5 kilograms of sham cocaine. We brought those cases to the court's attention, yet the district court did not engage in an unwarranted sentencing disparity analysis. And that is one of our claims of error for why the district court procedurally erred in this case. The district court stated that Section 3553A6 was the type of analysis that it found that courts should not be utilizing to any extent. The court apparently felt that it was limited to situations involving co-defendants, and we cite the passage in our brief as well as the transcript which is attached in the appendix. But as this court has ruled on numerous occasions, A6 is addressed to differences amongst similarly situated defendants across judicial districts and involving different judges. It's not limited to situations involving co-defendants. And the reason we submit that that was an important factor in this case is we were asking the district court to give a non-guideline sentence. In that instance, we're asking the district court to see whether the 3553 factors actually conforms to the guidelines. We're calling on the district court to exercise its discretion. Our complaint isn't here that the district court considered unwarranted sentencing disparities and found that it wasn't appropriate. Our complaint is he didn't consider it at all. Under United States versus Cunningham, this court stated it will not infer the exercise of discretion when there's no indication of that in the record. Rather, there's an affirmative indication in the record that the district court said it was not considering A6. It found it was suggested that it was only applicable to situations involving co-defendants. In addition to which, we specifically requested a split sentence or probation. The district court indicated it would not consider any policy, it wasn't considering any policy provisions on this issue. It noted that they were a historical relic, and while we of course agree that the guidelines are now advisory, factors such as any pertinent policy statements are still a 3553 factor that courts must consider. In this case, there were pertinent policy statements. There's a specific policy statement in Chapter 1 regarding the efficacy of probation or split sentence as a deterrent. Deterrence was a factor that the district court was concerned with in issuing a guideline sentence. We submit that the district court erred in failing to consider 3553A6 in conjunction with 3553A5.
When you talk about comparative sentences, you'd say, well, the court, there were no co-defendants, obviously, so he's on his own, whatever. And the court looked, I know that, I guess it's relevant evidence where they found the stuff in the house, you know, the money, the cocaine, some heroin there, and lots of other things that indicate this is more than just a one-time transaction. And it was $120,000. I'm sure there are other cases like this that maybe somebody got a comparable sentence. You came up with some where the person that got less. But it seemed that the judge did do a pretty thorough analysis and gave him time for plenty of give and take discussion before he came up with the sentence. Now, is there something mitigating about that, that he did go into that kind of detail and consideration?
The district court did do a thorough analysis with several of the 3553 factors. Our assignment of error is that he didn't do it with two factors. And the reason we find that particularly prejudicial in this case is because 3553 in this case wasn't only to be used to fashion a sentence, but it was the analysis to determine whether the sentence would be concurrent or consecutive. In this instance, we submit that a more thorough analysis of 3553 was required. The district court specifically said he was ignoring 3553A6, and I recognize the precedent from this court that says a judge necessarily considers that when it's within a guideline sentence. However,
well, he considered it, he didn't apply it. I'm not exactly sure how much, I mean, he recognized it, I guess he didn't do that much.
That's right. He didn't apply it. That's our complaint. He didn't apply it against us. He didn't apply it for us. He didn't exercise its discretion in that regard. That's our assignment of error with respect to A6. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Mr. Block.
May it please the Court. My name is Stephen Block. I represent the United States. In this case, the district court properly considered all of the relevant sentencing factors on the record and addressed all seven of the 3553A factors and has given this court a record to review to see that he did exactly that. With regard to the factor regarding unwarranted disparity, it is inaccurate to say the court said he's ignoring it. That's not what the court said. The court addressed the factor and decided that in this case it was not particularly helpful in crafting an appropriate sentence. And it is within the district court's authority to decide how to apply the various factors. I would note that even though he said that the court said that the factor was not particularly helpful here, he did address the guidelines quite extensively. And this court has held recently in the Halliday case that a court that imposes a within-guideline sentence is necessarily aware and considering unwarranted disparities. So we believe that is not correct to say the court just simply ignored it. The court clearly was aware of the factor and decided what weight to give it in this case. With regard to the policy statements, as we say in our brief, the defendant, the appellant, did not point the court to any particular policy statement that it wanted the court to address. And the court's comments on the policy statement recognized the role that policy statements have in the post-Booker era. The government would note that with regard to the policy statements the defendant now says he wanted the court to address, the court did consider those. He just didn't couch them in the terms of a policy statement. In terms of the request for a split sentence or sentence of probation, the court, after addressing all of the 3553A factors, said that it did not find any of the arguments in support of such a sentence convincing. It was aware of the possibility for probationary and split sentences and rejected it. What the court did do was consider the history, the characteristics, went through a long colloquy and a give and take, as Your Honor noted, addressing both the aggravating and mitigating factors. So from a procedural perspective, the court did what it is supposed to do here. With regards to the reasonableness of the sentence and the request for concurrent time, this was a within-guideline sentence and actually a sentence at the low end of the guidelines. And in reaching this decision, the court looked to the fact that this was a substantial drug transaction, as Your Honor pointed out, the fact that there was heroin, cocaine, money, guns found at the defendant's apartment. What the district court judge said in considering an appropriate sentence is that this appeared to be a first-time, I think he said first-time caughter, not a first-time offender, and he factored that in determining that a guideline sentence was appropriate here. Though there is a statutory presumption generally in favor of concurrent time, as the guidelines also make clear, if the maximum on any one count is not sufficient to achieve the total punishment, and that's in 5G 1.2, the court may, of course, impose consecutive sentences in order to achieve the total punishment. The court here did that after addressing all of the relevant factors. If the panel has no questions, the government will rest on its briefs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Block. Anything further, Mr. Shepard?
I did want to respond not only to counsel's argument about the disparity, but Your Honors, you had mentioned the possibility of a co-defendant. Although there wasn't a co-defendant on this case in the district court, the cooperating informant who led to the transaction, which led to the indictment in this case, was indicted and did receive a sentence of 54 months in a prior case. He was the cooperating informant in this case. With respect to...
Was that cooperation some factor in his other sentence?
I wasn't present at that sentencing hearing, but I'm sure it was. Of course, we noted that maybe the disparity is warranted by the cooperation. However, his guidelines were over 100 months. That would be a 50% discount on a sentence based on the cooperation. And just in terms of the conduct here, we submit that that cooperating informant's conduct was far more egregious than the telephone conduct that Mr. Reyes-Medina engaged in. As to counsel's reference about 5G 1.2, of course, that was when the guidelines were mandatory. So the fact that they say a sentence should be consecutive to achieve a guideline sentence, it's not surprising that the guidelines read like that. That's when they were mandatory, so they sought to be internally consistent. The bottom line is the nature and circumstances of this offense. It was one transaction, and that's why we move for concurrent time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court